The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TrueGreen.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
150 years, the Kentucky Derby's been an icon of racing and luxury. The first Saturday in May, the world turns its attention here.
They're off in the Kentucky Derby. And they're into the stretch. Oh, my goodness.
This is the place to be.
The 150th Kentucky Derby, Saturday, May 4th, on NBC and Peacock.
Both baseball and the NBA have had betting issues come up this week. We've mentioned them briefly. We've had other things that we need to focus on because it was the league meetings, monumental change of the kickoff, hip drop tackle, other issues happening, draft less than 4 weeks away. Now that I've got 2 hours to fill on my own, and oh, by the way, programming note, Paul Allen, voice of the Vikings, will be joining us just about an hour from now. We'll land the plane, finish the show, talking to Paul about what the Vikings are up to and how high he thinks they might go in round one of the draft now that they have a couple of first-round picks this year that they can use as ammunition to move up. We'll start this conversation, though, with a question from the mailbag, and I appreciate anyone out there who has mobilized to quickly give us ideas for content today. RB Roughnecks, how do you think the NFLPA will tackle gambling in the next CBA? Surely they will try to limit punishments for their players and set guidelines for offenses. And this is a good place to start because it helps us all get on the same page about the power the NFL has in this subject area. When it comes to gambling, because it is an extension of the overall power to protect and preserve the integrity of the game, the union has no say whatsoever. The union has already conceded that the gambling policy is within the full and complete province of management. The union has no power. The union has no rights. And a year ago, when that first wave of suspensions arising from guys betting on other sports while they happened to be in the facility, even though under the rules, if they were standing on the street outside the front doors, it would have been okay. Somehow, taking your cell phone from the sidewalk where you can make legally a wager on March Madness, the NBA, whatever, and walking through the door transforms it into an affront against the integrity of the game. When that all first came up, that's when it became clear to me. The NFL makes these rules, and Chris Sims had a great idea. And he may be more right than he realizes. Because I said, if the NFL has full power over this, full discretion, why don't they just say, if you want to play professional football, you can't gamble at all? Why are you giving these guys the opportunity to get themselves in a jackpot in a bad way? I never understood. My dad always said that. You're going to get yourself in a jackpot. What? Is that jackpot good? Anyway, jackpot in a bad way. Why are you even creating this possibility? And Sims' idea, simple. You got a lot of rich guys, young guys, single, disposable income out the wazoo. You want them to bet. You want them to bet because you want them to lose. See, that's I saw somewhere someone arguing for greater freedom for the players to bet so they can participate in this new revenue stream. No, you got it wrong. You got it wrong. The way you participate in the revenue stream is on the house side. You get sponsorship money from the house because the house always wins. You own part of the sports book, as every owner is allowed to do, up to 5% of a company that operates a sports book. That's the dirty little secret that they don't talk about. They won't even tell us who the owners are who own a piece of DraftKings or FanDuel or BetMGM or this one or that one. You're not, they're doing you a favor if they tell you you can't do it. They're looking for suckers. They're looking for losers. They're looking for whales. You know what happens to a whale? A whale gets harpooned. That's what they're looking for. So why do they let players bet on other sports when they're not at the facility, not traveling on work? Because they want them to lose. These are whales that can be harvested for their blubber. So, what will happen in the next CBA? Nothing will happen in the next CBA. The NFL doesn't have to do anything. The CBA is about give and take on the areas where the union actually has power. The gambling policy will be whatever the NFL wants it to be. And this is the only area where the NFL, having full discretion with no power by the union to tell them otherwise, does the players a favor. Where else do they do the players a favor? Hey, we're doing you a favor. We're letting you bet. We're doing ourselves a favor because we know you're going to lose. All right, so here's why the NFL needs to be concerned about what's happened this week. And I don't know how concerned they are. And I don't know how aggressive they're ever going to be in trying to find potential violations. But the Shohei Ohtani case, which came to light simply because they busted or they're investigating or they're on the trail of an illegal bookmaker in California, it turns out that his interpreter was betting with this bookie. And we still don't know whether it was theft. I saw yesterday, well, if it's theft, why didn't they file criminal charges? I don't know that criminal charges have even been filed against the translator if he stole $4.5 million. You would think if someone stole $4.5 million from you, you'd go to the cops at some point and say, hey, excuse me, I don't mean to bother you. I know you're busy with, you know, other things, but somebody stole $4.5 million from me. Do you think you could look into that? The whole thing still has layers and levels of questions, but at the core, if, and I want to say if because I don't need to get sued on top of everything else that I've gotten myself in trouble with today. If it can ultimately be proven that Shohei Ohtani was actively involved in this and that the interpreter was just the conduit for the betting, look, I wonder how much time they sit around the league offices brainstorming all the ways that gambling can cause problems for them. But I guarantee you that there are professional athletes in every sport who are using family members and friends to be the ones who bet on their behalf, that they are bankrolling the gambling operation. They have some loose agreement they've come up with. You know, I'll put in the money. You are the one who makes the bets. Run some of them by me. I'll be involved in it. I'll give you X percent of the winnings. You know, you do get into issues with Uncle Sam at some point. Who's going to pay the taxes on this? But first, you got to win. You got to win before you got to worry about paying taxes on it. Most of these guys aren't going to win over the long haul. Oh, you're going to have your periodic wins that give you enough of a dopamine rush that you come back and bet some more. And then you get to the end of the year and you add up your losses and your wins. And you're like, well, don't got to worry about declaring any of this on my tax return because I lost. So it's one of those things where common sense tells us the attraction is too strong. The technology is too easy. All you got to do is go to the app store. If you're in a state where it's legal, you go to the app store, you put in the name DraftKings or FanDuel, you press get, it downloads, and off you go. There it is, right on your phone, right on your phone, right with everything else, right there with Netflix and Instagram and, you know, whatever other app you have. It's all right there. So I have a feeling that this is going to be something the NFL only ever investigates if it falls into their laps and they have to do something with it. And here's one way it could fall into their laps. And I mentioned not long ago, and I know you're going to wonder, where the hell is he going with this? I mentioned the movie The Prestige, Christopher Nolan film. I probably mentioned it after Nolan won Best Director for Oppenheimer. The Prestige is an awesome movie, and I've since watched it again after mentioning it on the show, and I've heard from some folks who watched it and loved it. It's great. It's awesome. I highly recommend it. But there's a point that's made in there, and I don't want to spoil any of it, but there's a character who gets involved in something that's going on, and the character realizes, I got a lot of power here. I know some things. I can screw everything up for this other character. I can start making demands. I can start asking for more money. Because all I have to do is tell the truth about what's been going on. See, that's the problem. Beyond the fact that you're violating the rules, especially if you're using a friend or a family member as a conduit to bet on football, if you play in the NFL, now there's no suggestion that Shohei Ohtani's interpreter has bet on baseball. And isn't that, I know he worked for the Dodgers, but he's engaged in illegal betting anyway. I mean, the fact that he stayed away from baseball, doesn't that make you wonder if he really was betting for Shohei Ohtani, who knew I can't bet on baseball or I'm going to get Pete Rosed. Anyway, if you're using a family member or a friend with legal gambling apps and they're betting on football, betting on your team, betting on your prop bets, especially if betting on the under, we'll talk about that in a second. But if that's what's happening, that person who's making the bets, a lot of power. When that person realizes how much power they have, when that person realizes the havoc they can create if so inclined, that may be a punishment far worse than whatever the person could do to the league. Because being the one who's on the wrong end of that kind of power and having to cough up a little more money or do whatever this person says because the person's eventually going to blow the whistle on you and get you in serious trouble, get you banned for life, potentially for a year at a minimum, or maybe for life. That's what I think is coming. I think we're naive to believe that that isn't going to happen eventually. We're going to find out about a family member or a friend who's been betting on behalf of a player, and that family member or friend got sufficiently disgruntled or sufficiently greedy that they went to the league office. Something happened to piss them off. The relationship ended, whatever it may be. It may just end up being a former spouse who knows about it, former girlfriend who knows about it, somebody who was previously in an intimate relationship with the player who's mad about how it ended and knows that insert name of player has been betting through brother, cousin, friend, whoever. The other issue that came up this week as it relates to gambling, NBA, Jonte Porter of the Raptors, investigated because of two different games, one on January 26th and one on March 20, where he made an early exit. And we did talk about this a little bit because I did the whole Rodney Dangerfield. Oh, my arm, it's broken. You fake an injury and you leave early, or you fake an illness and you leave early, and your unders hit, your prop bets hit. For your points, your assists, your rebounds, your steals, your block shots, whatever you can bet over under on. And I have a feeling you can bet over under on anything. All your unders hit. So for Jonte Porter, who left early on January 26th because of an aggravation of an eye injury, and on March 20 left early because he was sick, his unders hit, and you throw on top of that suspicious activity, increased volume of wagers on the unders, starts to look fishy. The NBA is looking into it. Jonte Porter could have a much bigger problem than Shohei Ohtani. A much bigger problem. And this is where I think the greatest risk is. You know, we talk all the time about football. What can one person really do to affect the outcome of a game? I've mentioned in the past, and I still need to run a fresh link to this at an item on PFT, the initial episode of the PBS series Frontline from January of 1983 was devoted entirely to the connections between the mob and the NFL. and the way that the mob has infiltrated pro football for gambling purposes. And there was a claim in there that one group got to coach and quarterback. I think it's coach, quarterback, and official. You get to those three, that's your Bermuda Triangle. You can really control the outcome of a game if you've got the coach, the quarterback, and the referee on your payroll. But beyond that, because it's still going to be difficult, if you're just talking about an individual player's prop bets, look at what happened when Bijan Robinson was sick on a Sunday morning and the Falcons didn't announce it. How many people lost their minds? How many people lost their money? Anybody that bet the under? See, anybody who knew about it, anybody who had that inside information that I don't think the NFL is ever going to be able to properly handle. Hey, bet the under on Bijan Robinson today for every category because he's sick. And they haven't said anything because they don't want the Buccaneers to know. They don't feel like they have to disclose it. They found out to the tune of $100,000, which really isn't that much money. It's not much of a penalty. Anything other than taking away draft picks isn't going to get somebody's attention. That's the thing to watch. And that's why the NCAA wants all states that have legalized gambling to get rid of prop bets. Because it's a combination of two concerns. One, it's the easiest way to corrupt someone and get them to influence the outcome of the wager. Your own individual prop bets, especially the under. The other thing is, for the people who are making these prop bet wagers, it's another reason for them to get pissed off at the players who don't produce. I bet you to score more than 18.5 points tonight. You stink. I'm going to harass you on social media. I'm going to make threats against you because you failed to deliver. This is why I don't like the prop bets. And I know that you will hear some DraftKings reads from time to time on this program, but I still can't keep my own personal beliefs out of this. I don't like the prop bets because it takes the player and turns the player into the dice on the craps table, the cards on the blackjack table, the little steel ball on the roulette wheel. They are even further dehumanized than they become when they're out there looking like cyborgs with the helmets and the shoulder pads, and they're a step removed from the humanity that the rest of us experience. That's why we try all the time to humanize the players as much as we can. When they're viewed as just somebody who either does or doesn't make more than 6.5 catches in a game, that further dehumanizes them because they really are just the implements of whatever game of chance we've decided to play that night. So I don't like the prop bets. And I know that when football season rolls around, we'll do the Thursday night props over under. How many passing yards is Patrick Mahomes going to have? We're going to do it. But I understand why the NCAA wants to get rid of it. And given this Jontay Porter situation, it's something the NFL needs to be very concerned about. Less concerned about the clock today because it's just me. We'll get through the 2 hours. We have plenty of content, though. Paul Allen joining in about 40 minutes. When we return, Caleb Williams, as we all know, is the likely number one overall pick when the draft begins in 27 days. Did a college coach inadvertently disclose the destination of his quarterback as potentially the second overall pick in the draft? We'll discuss that when this Friday edition of PFT Live continues right after this.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
150 years, the Kentucky Derby's been an icon of racing and luxury. The first Saturday in May, the world turns its attention here.
They're off in the Kentucky Derby. And they're into the stretch. Oh, my goodness!
the place to be.
The 150th Kentucky Derby, Saturday, May 4th, on NBC and Peacock.
He is going to be so committed to taking care of himself that you're going to have to worry about size or he doesn't weigh enough. Lamar's done a pretty good job with his size. I think Mahomes, I wouldn't consider him a giant because he's going to get the ball out to the playmakers and make plays for Washington.
For Washington, wait, what? I almost missed that at the end because what happened to Brian Kelly? I thought Brian Kelly spoke with a Louisiana accent. What happened to that guy? Who was that guy? Who was that guy? I didn't hear. I don't know. Anyway, for Washington. Washington holds the second overall pick in the draft. Jaden Daniels, regarded by some as the guy who should go number two overall. Chris Sims has said repeatedly the Commanders should sprint to the podium with Jaden Daniels' name after Caleb Williams becomes the first overall pick in the draft. And I don't know if Brian Kelly knows anything, and it's always better to have your guys drafted higher than lower. That becomes part of your pitch. It's harder and harder to make your pitch now because the players are just going to go where the money is, and they should. I'm not saying they shouldn't. But before the players were able to get paid, your biggest feather in your hat was to be able to say, look at where I got this guy drafted. Look at where I got that guy drafted. I turned him into that player, and I will do the same for you. Jaden Daniels, Heisman Trophy winner, nearly 6'4", very fast, great thrower. Chris was making that point yesterday when we were looking at his pro day. Somebody in his face, flat-footed, falling backward, making a very effective throw. This guy potentially could be very special. Everybody's looking for that next franchise quarterback. And the thing that is the dividing line, what do you do when the play that's called goes to hell? Do you have the skill set to either run it or run around long enough until somebody is open and throw it? Can you make chicken salad? Do you have the athleticism, the arm strength, the ability to throw off of different platforms and at different arm angles, the Patrick Mahomes dynamic? That is the difference between good and great in today's NFL. And you got to have a great quarterback or you don't have a chance against Patrick Mahomes, who you're going to come across at some point if you're successful in the postseason, because he's always going to be there. You're going to have to kill him. Not literally. You're going to have to outscore him. That sounds better. If you want to get to the top of the mountain, you're going to have to out Patrick Mahomes, Patrick Mahomes. That's what everybody's looking for. That guy who can become in that conversation. Right now, it's Mahomes, Allen, Burrow. All these teams that don't have a settled quarterback situation are hoping to be the team that has a guy who invades that conversation. So it becomes Mahomes, Allen, Burrow, Caleb Williams, or Jaden Daniels, or Bo Nix, or Michael Penix, Drake May. We'll see. We'll see if any of them can enter that conversation. We'll see if any of them even become serviceable starting quarterbacks. 2021. Trevor Lawrence is the only one that's worked out, and we still don't know where he fits. Last year, kind of looked like he was moving toward that. Now it's kind of like we don't know. With the others, we know. We definitely know. And speaking of one of the others, there's a question from Doc Bob Romano, or Romano as the case may be, depending upon where you live. Some places they call it Romano. Some places they say Romano. I have a feeling that this is someone who goes by Romano. Do you think the Steelers will utilize Jay Fields in any way like the Saints used Taysom Hill? Absolutely, positively. It was the first thought I had when the news broke 13 days ago of the Steelers acquiring Justin Fields from the Bears for a sixth-round draft pick in 2025. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Between Russell Wilson for $1.2 million and Justin Fields for a sixth-round pick in 2025, Art Rooney should be wearing a ski mask everywhere he goes from now to the end of the football season. Because this is a double heist. A heist on the NFL and the Broncos with Wilson, and a heist on the Bears with Justin Fields. I think they're going to get him out there. This isn't a question of putting your best quarterback on the field. And there's a chance maybe he will be the best quarterback. But even if he's not the starter, you put your best 11 players on the field offensively. And I'm not saying he's going to be blocking. He's going to be out there. He's going to be doing things, I think. I think Arthur Smith, the new offensive coordinator, has already drawn up plays. And then you throw Cordarrelle Patterson into the mix. Think about the kind of mismatches the Steelers can create. And you know what teams like to do? When you have versatile players who have expansive skill sets, that's when you shift into overdrive and go no huddle. Because then you start, you get a favorable defensive alignment. You get personnel out there that you want to lock in. We're not going to make substitutions. We're just going to move guys around. You want those Swiss Army knife players that can do a lot of different things. And then you hit the no huddle button and you start moving those guys around and you create real mismatches. So I expect to see Justin Fields all season long. Less than 51% of the plays, because that upgrades a sixth round pick to a fourth round pick. But you know what? If it's working, who cares? And if he's the best quarterback, I think he'll be the starter. If he clearly shows that he's better than Russell Wilson, he'll be the starter, and Russell will be the backup at $1.2 million. He won't be released before the start of the season. He'll be a good soldier because he needs this year to set the stage for next year. And if Justin Fields ends up starting, there's a chance he gets injured and the door opens for Russell Wilson. Anyway, that leads to the next question. Pats fan 0910, earlier this week you mentioned how Russell Wilson needs to help his Canton chances by playing well in Pittsburgh. Who is closer to the Hall of Fame, Russell Wilson or Matthew Stafford? And is either actually close to being in? That's a great question. And I don't say that just to buy time. It really is a great question. Looking at the overall statistical achievement, and we've got both guys winning a Super Bowl. Neither guy was the Super Bowl MVP. It was Malcolm Smith for the Seahawks in Super Bowl 48. And it was Cooper Kupp, should have been Aaron Donald in Super Bowl 56 for the Rams. 15 seasons for Stafford. He's got 56,000 passing yards. He is much higher on the all-time list than folks would realize. 357 touchdown passes, 180 interceptions. Russell Wilson in 12 seasons, 43,000 passing yards, 334 touchdowns, 106 interceptions. Two Pro Bowls for Stafford, nine for Russell Wilson. That's amazing. But you know what? If you flip Stafford and Wilson for most of that decade of the 2010s, Stafford probably ends up in a lot of Pro Bowls as well because Russell Wilson had a much better team around him. I think for both, the jury's out. And these are both guys who spent the bulk of their careers during the Tom Brady era, easy for him to say, the Tom Brady era, Peyton Manning tail end of his career, and then the arrival of Patrick Mahomes. So these are just kind of supporting cast members for the Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes show. Are they good enough to get in? Do they need a second Super Bowl win to get in? A second Super Bowl appearance to get in? With Kurt Warner, it was three Super Bowl appearances and one win. You've got two Super Bowl appearances and one win for Russell Wilson. One appearance, one win for Matthew Stafford. He's probably going to finish with better numbers than Russell Wilson. It could be at the end of the day, there's just one spot that goes to Stafford or Wilson, and it may take some time either way for it to happen. Neither guy is going to be a mic drop. Both guys are going to take some effort. It's going to take a coalition. It's going to take some politicking. It's going to take maybe some post-career achievements in the NFL space that will boost the perception of a playing career, just like Dick LeBeau. Dick LeBeau got in as a player, but for his storied career as a coach, he's not getting in as a player. John Madden got in as a coach, but for his storied career as a contributor, he's not getting in as a coach. Could be that there's something more that Stafford or Wilson do that will be calculated to advance their cause. Look at Eli Manning. Eli Manning's getting in anyway because his name's Manning and he's got two Super Bowl wins. There's only one quarterback with two Super Bowl wins that he played in that's not in, and that's Jim Plunkett. Yeah, Ben Roethlisberger, but he's probably getting in too. Eli Manning's getting in. This Manning cast is only going to help him year after year after year. The stuff he's done post-playing career will help him get in when the time comes. Wilson or Stafford may need exactly something along those lines. And again, there are still chapters left in the book for each of them. We'll see how they play moving forward. Can Stafford get the Rams back to a Super Bowl? That would probably get him in. Can Wilson get the Steelers to a Super Bowl? That would probably get him in. Brock Purdy has gotten the 49ers to a Super Bowl in just his second year. He is 1 year away from getting his second contract. Is his team owner, Jed York, concerned about that? We'll take that up next on this Friday edition of PFT Live.
We made a decision to invest 3 first-round picks in a quarterback that didn't turn out to be the right choice. We got very lucky and very fortunate that a guy that we drafted in the 7th round made up for that. So, you know, in my mind, we invested 3 first-round picks into the position, not into necessarily the one specific player.
Boy, that's some mental gymnastics there from 49ers owner Jed York. Because we got lucky, the year after we did the really stupid thing, it all evens out and we're okay. We didn't do the really stupid thing after all. And it was really stupid to give up 3 first-round picks and a 3rd-round pick to get Trey Lance and not use him right away and then put him on the bench all year. And then he starts the next year and he breaks his ankle. And the guy that you took an ultimate flyer on, the last pick in the draft, ends up being pretty damn good. Maybe Trey Lance would have been even better. But they gave up on him, and he's languishing now on the depth chart in Dallas while Brock Purdy has shown he is pretty good. And is that not a cautionary tale for all these teams that are falling all over themselves to try to draft a quarterback at the top of the process? Isn't that all we need to know? You never know where that great quarterback's going to come from. And it's impossible to fully and completely evaluate them. All that stuff that's going on between the scouting combine and the first day of the draft, all the poking and prodding, all of the studying of film, the pro day workout, which is meaningless unless it's really bad. No one should have anything other than a great pro day workout. You're throwing to your teammates from college. You've had the chance to rehearse it as much as you want. You're in comfortable surroundings. The only bad pro day workout that I can remember is Teddy Bridgewater because he took his gloves off. He put his gloves back on for his private workout with the Vikings, and the Vikings liked what they saw, and they traded back into round one and drafted him. By the way, speaking of the Vikings, Paul Allen joining us in about 20 minutes. So, that's where the 49ers are as it relates to the big picture quarterback acquisition. It all evens out. Even Steven is what they are. Regardless, they're eventually going to have to pay Brock Purdy. And Purdy, by rule, under the collective bargaining agreement, cannot get his second contract until after this coming regular season. Here is Jed York again on the topic of eventually giving Brock Purdy a giant pile of money.
I mean, I think it's a good problem when your quarterback is one of your highest paid guys on your team and in the league. So there's a lot of planning that goes into it. But, you know, again, I'm glad that we have Prague, JL, Kyle. Like, they're the ones that will figure out the details of it. And I just have to sign the check. So my part in that's pretty easy.
But kind of hard, too, isn't it?
It's not hard. I mean, it's what the market is, right? Like, it's not like Brock is going to ask for something that no one has ever asked for before. You have, I don't know how many players making over $40 million as a quarterback right now. And when we signed Jimmy several years ago, you know, it was the largest deal in the history of the NFL for 3 minutes. But we were paying Jimmy 26 or 27, and you see, like, the market has just, it's changed. And I, like, whether I like it or not, like, that's what the market is. And you have to accept the reality of the world. And to me, the quarterback is the most important position, not just in football, but in all sports. And those guys should be paid a lot of money.
Wow. Clip that, save it. Brock Purdy's agents file that away for the negotiations that will begin. Really, you can start the negotiations this year. You can demand the contract, and I'm still waiting for somebody to do that. At the moment the third regular season ends, the second contract can be signed. If I'm on a playoff team and I've put in my 3 years and I've got postseason games still to be played and the injury risk that goes along with them, including the possibility somebody's going to hit me on my arm as I'm getting ready to throw a pass and blow out my elbow, I want my contract the moment the regular season ends. We'll see if the 49ers do that. That's a question that wasn't asked. That's a question that never gets asked. But the way the CBA is written, it's not after your third year ends all the way through the playoffs. It's after your third regular season ends. And I'll give the 49ers credit. They do compensate their quarterbacks. Jimmy Garoppolo, it was $27.5 million per year on a five-year deal. And it was literally a blink of an eye because Kirk Cousins got to 28 once that free agency period started. Even taking it back to Colin Kaepernick, back before he became Colin Kaepernick, the focal point of all sorts of political issues and culture wars and whatnot, the 49ers made him the highest paid player in the NFL for a little bit. Although I remember with his agents at the time, and I can't remember who they were, they really oversold it as a much better deal than it was. And once we got the real numbers, it was like, this deal isn't nearly what you're claiming it to be. And the 49ers kept him for a few years. And then it got to the last year of the contract, and I think it was voidable. He elected to void it. The 49ers would have cut him anyway. That was one of the big anti-Kaepernick talking points. Well, he's the one who walked away from the 49ers. They were going to cut him anyway. John Lynch has said it on this program. They were going to cut him anyway. Anyway, I don't want to go back down that rabbit hole. The point is the 49ers pay their quarterbacks when the time comes. That's good news for Brock Purdy. The problem is, the challenge is, the difficulty comes from finding the right spot on the range. 55 is the top of the market right now. They paid Jimmy Garoppolo the top of the market. That would be my argument. You've got another great quarterback, and Garoppolo wasn't even there for very long. You made Jimmy Garoppolo the highest paid quarterback in the NFL when he was with you for half of a season. This guy's been with you for 3 years. You've never had to pay him much money. He was the last pick in the draft. Whatever the top of the market is after this year, I want that plus $1. What are they going to say to that? No? I don't know. Does he deserve top of the market? If he's not top of the market, where does he land? Between Joe Burrow at 55, which is a real 55, and Daniel Jones at 40, which is a Fugazi 40, where does he land? Look at Josh Allen at 43. Brandon Bean, the GM of the Bills, did not appreciate it 4 weeks and 3 days ago when I made that point about at some point you got to fix Josh Allen's contract. But where do you land on that hierarchy? And where's it going to go from here? Now, Patrick Mahomes has had his deal reshuffled where they front-loaded it, so over the next few years he's making 55, and they'll continue to do that every few years. But he signed that ultra-long-term deal. You know, what if you're Brock Purdy? What if Brock Purdy decides, I don't like what they've offered me, I'll just enter year four of my contract, and they can franchise tag me in 2026. And they can franchise tag me in 27, and I'll be Kirk Cousins in 2028. I keep waiting for more quarterbacks to do that, to say affirmatively, I'm just going to take two tags. You're not going to give me a 44% raise in year three. And if you do, great. I was doing the math the other day. I mean, it becomes astronomical by that third tag because you have the base tag. It's 20% raise for year two and then a 44% raise over year two for year three, which is why Kirk Cousins became a free agent. So that's what the 49ers have to deal with after this year. Now, my theory as it relates to receiver Brandon Ayuk, they're trying to hold it all together one more year. They have Ayuk in his fifth-year option at $14 million. They've got Deebo Samuel with a cap number of $28 million. They've got George Kittle, who's had a restructuring. He's got a big cap number, at least had one. You've got Purdy at this bargain basement price for one more year before they have to deal with him. I think they'd very much like to get Brandon Ayuk to not jostle for a new contract until after this year. I mention that because appearing on the Shannon Sharpe and Chad Ochocinco Nightcap podcast, here's Brandon Ayuk talking about his contract situation.
You are so valuable to that offense. You are what I call a true number one who can play on the outside, he can play on the inside. So I don't understand what the issue is over there, but just understand you deserve to get paid. And I ain't just talking about no any money. I'm talking about 30, 32 a year.
I appreciate that.
And I need 3%.
You had the IG story with the emojis, the money, the talking, the BS, and the walking. So what's been relayed to you, as much as you can divulge, what's been relayed to you through your representative?
We're trying to get work done. They're trying to get work done. I mean, Michael Elcho just said, I'm trying to get what I deserve. I felt like this season playing football, I figured out who I was as a person, as a player, what I bring to the table, what I bring to the locker room, what I bring to an organization, and just the value I hold.
We talked about this earlier in the week. Jerry Jeudy, whose accomplishments on the field, not even close to what Brandon Ayuk has done, getting $18 million a year from the Browns. Here's Ayuk at $14 million and change in his fifth-year option. Second-team All-Pro, far better than Deebo Samuel as a receiver. Remember when they paid Deebo Samuel? It was because they've been using him as a running back as well, and then they trade for Christian McCaffrey. I don't really understand that from the 49ers. You know, for a team that has been so damn good since Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch arrived, they do some weird things at times. They do some confusing things. They finally got the quarterback position figured out. But, you know, at some point, they're going to have to pull off the Band-Aid on Deebo Samuel and give that money to Brandon Ayuk. And I really do believe they'd like to hold those four core offensive players. I don't mean to slight Trent Williams. I mean quarterback skill position players. And you have Christian McCaffrey, too. I'm surprised Christian McCaffrey hasn't started saying, maybe we need to take a closer look at what I bring to the table here. Maybe I need a contract adjustment as I get closer to the point where I'm not going to be playing at the same level I've been playing at. He's the touchdown scoring machine for the San Francisco 49ers. So I understand where Ayuk's coming from. 30 to 32 million, I don't know about that. See, the problem is, I think in today's NFL, as we see the receiver position become more like the running back position where you can throw a stone in the draft and hit a guy who can come in and be coached into being a great contributor. They're everywhere. At the receiver position, I think you're going to have a couple of guys, leave that up, a couple of guys at the very top who deserve it. And Justin Jefferson is going to invade that club. And Ja'Marr Chase is going to invade that club. And Tyreek Hill's 30 isn't a real 30. It's a Fugazi 30 with a huge final year that drives the average to 30. It is true BS aimed only at allowing Tyreek Hill to say, I make $30 million a year when he'll never make $30 million a year, ever. But that's the high watermark for now in new money average on a contract. Who is going to surpass that? I don't think Brandon Ayuk can get to 30, at least not now. And there's value to him in letting Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase set the next bar, and then you try to come in somewhere under it. Either way, if I'm Brandon Ayuk, I'm not inclined to set foot on a football field this year until I get my contract. And I can see why right now, because this is the time of year where guys get paid, and you see Jerry Jeudy getting $18 million a year, and you're like, wait a minute, I've done everything that's been expected of me. I've put in 4 years, and I'm not getting my reward. But he's in the same boat that Justin Jefferson's in, and they were drafted at about the same spot in the 20s. It was, and I remember this, this is all part of the Jordan Love narrative. The Packers wanted Justin Jefferson. He was gone. Then they wanted Brandon Ayuk. The 49ers traded up with the Colts to get Ayuk. That's how they landed on Jordan Love. You may have all three guys end up being great players in the NFL. But both Jefferson and Ayuk waiting for their second contracts. I think the Vikings, as much as they want to pay Justin Jefferson, I think the 49ers want to wait a year and then pay Brandon Ayuk. But they don't want to do it now. They may have to go ahead and do it now because he's clearly not thrilled with the current state of affairs. Let's take a break. When we return, and again, we have Paul Allen coming up in just about 10 minutes, we'll take an early look at the projected win totals if you are inclined to wager on the over or the under on how a team will or won't do for 2024. Those are now available. We'll look at some of those next here on PFT Live. Earlier in this program, I talked about individual prop bets and the potential perils there. One of the more fun bets, more intriguing wagers, is team performance over the course of a season. Doesn't run into the same issues I was talking about. It's how a team collectively does week in and week out, and whether they achieve or fail to achieve the magic number that has been given to them in advance. The initial projected win totals are out. Pre-draft, it's a little risky. You could get lucky, or it could all blow up in your face based upon what a team does or doesn't do in the draft. The Chiefs, the Ravens, and the 49ers are leading the way with the DraftKings projected win totals 11.5. 11.5. So you can bet the over, you can bet the under. Last year, the Chiefs had 11 wins, the Ravens had 13, and the 49ers had 12. So two of them were over. The Super Bowl champion was under, 11-6. What you do in the playoffs doesn't matter. This is regular season win total only. How many teams, how many games will a given team win or not win? So we've got the – do we have a graphic with it? There we go. Hey, there are the AFC wins. I knew it was coming at some point. It starts with the Chiefs at 11.5, and lo, how the mighty have fallen. Look at the last team on the list. Good Lord. The New England Patriots at 4.5. 4.5? 4.5? I'm going to take the over just on principle. It's the Patriots, for crying out loud. Some of those look a little low. It's easy to get caught up in that, too, when everybody's 0-0. The Titans look a little low at 6.5. The Steelers at 8.5. I think of all those right now, if I were a betting man, and I'm not, I would take the Steelers over and the Jets under. Those are the two that scream out to me, because I'm sorry, the Jets are still the Jets. The Jets are still a dysfunctional mess. I've already pissed off everyone with the Jets this week. I'll go ahead and empty the tank. The Jets are a mess. I have no faith in them going over 9.5. Oh, Aaron Rodgers is going to be back. For more than 4 snaps, I'm taking the under on the Jets and the over on the Steelers. I think the Steelers are going to be good. The Steelers addressed their most glaring need. They fired everyone on their quarterback depth chart, and they replaced them with low-cost, high-reward options in Russell Wilson and Justin Fields. They both might not be superstars, but one of them I think is going to be good enough. One of them is going to be better than what they had last year. They're both going to be better than what they had last year. There's a chance one of them is going to be dramatically better than what they had last year. Oh, and they still have the rest of the team. Yeah, give me the over on the Steelers. Responsibly. Please bet responsibly. Over on the Steelers. There's the NFC. And you see the 49ers at the top, the Panthers at the bottom. How do the Panthers have the same win total as the Patriots? 4.5. Vikings at 6.5. How dare you? How dare you? It doesn't sound all that wrong, depending upon what happens in the draft. That's why it's risky to make an over-under win total bet pre-draft. They may come out of this with, they may come out of it with a pretty damn good quarterback. Who knows? Looking at these, what jumps out at me here? Under on the Cowboys? What have the Cowboys done to have a double-digit win total? What have they done this offseason? They've gone all in. We've spent all of our time trying to figure out what the hell all in means. They haven't done anything to suggest they're going all in. I would go under on the Cowboys, over on the Buccaneers. Why are the Buccaneers at 8.5? Why are you dissing the Buccaneers? They kept Baker Mayfield. They kept Mike Evans. They still have players on that team that won a Super Bowl. They're going to like the fact that they're being overlooked. Oh, the Falcons have Kirk Cousins. And hey, you know, for the Falcons, the issue isn't are they going to win games in the regular season? They will. The question is, will they win night games in the regular season, and will they win postseason games? That's how I can see that ultimately playing out. So that part's fun. Oh, by the way, the Chiefs have the best odds to go 17-0 at plus 3,500. The Bills, Ravens, and 49ers are the next at plus 4,500. That seems like those are bad bets. I know it's good odds, 35-1 and 45-1. Find something else with long odds. I don't see anybody going 17-0, which of course means somebody's going 17-0 this year. DraftKings Sportsbook, by the way, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. In this season, new customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets instantly. Download the app and use the promo code PFTLIVE when you sign up. We are going to take a break. And, oh, by the way, I didn't say DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours. And then I also say, please bet responsibly. And now here's where I say we're going to take a break. And we hope to have voice of the Vikings, Paul Allen, on the program when PFT Live continues right after this. They need Kirk Cousins back in 2024, and it's in Kirk Cousins' best interest.
Wait. Hey, hold on. Stop the press. Say that again. I couldn't hear you.
It would be a mistake for him and for the Vikings to not want to squeeze the last bit out and see what happens.
Man, let's clip that out and put that on social media, team. Let's get that. You see that, everybody? You see that, Minnesota? Hey, Kirk Cousins, he got down to the last petal on the flower, and he loves you. It's official.
And there it is. And Kirk Cousins is gone. It's been almost 3 weeks. The guy who has called every Kirk Cousins game for the last 6 years in Minnesota and has been doing the Vikings games on radio since, is it 2002, Paul Allen? Is it that long? Are we that
2002.
Old?
2002. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And interestingly, in my second season, 2003, the final game of the year, of course you know this because you're a Vikings historian, it was McCown to Nathan Poole, and now Josh not only is our quarterback's coach, but he played with Sam Darnold, so we have a Darnold in, and he worked with Drake May at a Charlotte high school, so now I guess you have a Drake May in, if indeed you're looking for one.
You know, I'm ashamed of myself for not putting the Josh McCown pieces together, and I've been very well aware that was his rookie year when he threw that pass on the old rule that you could do the force-out judgment call. Nathan Poole did not get 2 feet down, but the assessment was that if he hadn't been shoved, he would have gotten 2 feet down, touchdown. The season can end this way, but yes, it did. I still remember that very well, and now I remember that Josh McCown, yes, now with the Vikings, and tore out the Vikings' heart that year that it looked like they were going to the playoffs. All right, well, I appreciate you very much on short notice joining us today. Shereen Williams is ill. I've done an hour and 40 minutes by myself. It's great to talk to you. And let's start with Kirk Cousins. Mm-hmm. What's been the overall reaction among the fan base, among the people you hear from on a regular basis with Kirk Cousins choosing to leave for Atlanta and the Vikings not choosing to put the money on the table to keep him?
Well, it's been interesting because, you know, I think a lot of fans in a habit state here in Minnesota who, you know, he got that 3-year guaranteed piece. I mean, I guess he had the audacity to take that, according to some. Then it's 2018. He's throwing it to the wrong team more frequently than preferred, and they're getting to the end zone, like Minka Fitzpatrick and P.J. Williams, stuff like that. So it got off to a little bit of a shaky start. The offensive coordinator in his first year here got fired during the season. Kevin Stefanski became the coordinator, subsequently head coach of the Browns, and here we are. But the interesting part is with the Netflix series Quarterback, you know, it's just, I mean, Kirk was portrayed in such a positive light, and genuinely speaking, that's the authentic Kirk Cousins. Well, a lot of the fan base really, really embraced that, you know, kind of like you and a lot of people watching right now. And then, you know, when it was like, is he going to stay and what's it going to take? And, you know, and why hasn't the regime signed him? It got a little tenuous and it got a little hot. But then he got that $100 million piece. And, you know, people were like, well, I mean, I don't think many people were willing to, if they were to be general managers, pay that at Kirk's age. I love Kirk, but I mean, that was a lot more than I thought it was going to be, too. And with the general manager, Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, you know, the 2022 draft, his first draft, hasn't really done the team any favors, with all due respect at this stage. The third year coming up, hopefully some of them turn some things around. So that got off to a little bit of a weird start. But now people are starting to realize that part of the job for Kwesi is to get the roster younger, find free agency money, and I guess find lines of delineation and draw lines in the sand like he did with this Cousins deal. And he didn't budge. And now I know why he didn't budge. So now we head to the draft in search of a quarterback with Sam Darnold, Nick Mullins, and Jaren Hall in the mix around here.
So fan base not mad about the outcome?
No.
And I know this is characteristic of folks in Minnesota. They're not inclined to be mad about anything, but they understand why Cousins left, and they understand why the Vikings didn't say, we'll give you $100 million fully guaranteed.
Yes. Well, but see, the thing for Kirk is he repeatedly said, whether on or off the microphone, you know, I want to finish my career in Minnesota. And knowing Kirk the way I do, he meant that. I mean, he really, really loved it here. So did his family. And I know you got a chance at the Super Bowl to meet Julie and to, you know, learn about their family and stuff. And I would imagine that you probably felt that genuine Minnesota feel from them. So people didn't even bang him about that when he left and went to Atlanta, because it's like, well, you know, it could be, well, what do you mean? You said you wanted to be here forever. Oh, wait, it's that? Oh, all right. I get it. You know, so it was really like that.
My theory over the past week or so has evolved into the Vikings really didn't want to continue the relationship, but they didn't want to create the impression that they were the ones who were pulling the plug on it. When Mark Wolf said at the league meetings that they only offered a full guarantee for the first year of the contract, if you're not going to guarantee into year two, you're not going to keep Kirk Cousins. Somebody else is going to guarantee into week two. This guy's used to having fully guaranteed contract. And right. If the Falcons are doing 90 over two plus an extra 10 they can't get out of unless they cut him after one, that's $100 million he's going to make. If the Vikings are only going 1 year, and the complaint or concern or whatever I'd heard from Kirk was it's basically become a year-to-year arrangement for him in Minnesota. He wants something more than year-to-year. He wants more control and more security than year-to-year, and the Vikings wanted the flexibility to move on from him if that's what they decide to do. So I think that maybe they wanted us to think keeping Kirk Cousins is plan A, and that plan B is let's see who we can get in the draft. It could be plan A is let's get our franchise quarterback in the draft. And plan B was, okay, we'll keep Kirk Cousins if we can keep him on our terms.
Well, I mean, it could be, but, you know, let's hearken to that Kevin O'Connell interview he did with Daniel Jeremiah and maybe Rich Eisen on NFL Network the final Saturday of the Combine. And, I mean, during the football season, I do a weekly sit-down with O'Connell. I tape I also tape a pregame interview with him every week, and I've gotten I adore the guy. And I think he's authentic, he's genuine, he really, really cares. His ability to work with players through turmoil and through consternation, you know, given his age and his relatability to players in their 20s, I think Kevin's fantastic. So with all that said, I'm not exactly sure Kevin, you know, was completely comfortable with Kirk leaving, because that NFL Network interview, man, you could just kind of tell, and you write about this all the time at PFT, you know, way about what happens at the combine, I guess stays at the combine and the tampering and stuff like that. But that Saturday, man, watching O'Connell, when he, you know, you could just tell that he kind of caught wind. Holy cow, something has happened here. And there's like zero chance that we're going to combat it. And Kevin wears his emotions on his sleeve, man, and on his face. And I could tell he was sad. I mean, Cousins was lights out here, man, before he popped that Achilles at Lambeau. You know that. But he got better every single year. And you know, with what Flores did with the defense last year, the majority of the season, and then now who they have this year, some new players they added, you know, I think Kevin looks at it like, man, we're kind of sitting on something here. But, you know, the quarterback spot's going to matter. Now, this draft. You know, it's when we were at the combine in 2020 before the pandemic, all the right people were saying how deep the wide receiver draft was. I'm an old schooler, man. I'm like, pump the brakes. Let me go ahead and watch him for a couple of years and see what happens. Well, they were right. Last year, I heard a lot about how deep the tight ends were in the draft, and they were right again. It was a super deep tight ends draft. This is a very, 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 very deep quarterbacks draft. I'm telling you right now, there are going to be quarterbacks taken on Saturday who get second contracts as starters. So with 11-23, I think the metaphorical writing is on the wall to move up and get a quarterback. The question would be who. And the way Kwesi Adofo-Mensah and the Vikings personnel staff have played this offseason, it's been phenomenal. I mean, Aaron Jones is a Viking. It took like 2 minutes to get him here. Are you kidding me? That's incredible. And then with the rest of the players, Kwesi has emptied the proverbial chamber with all the bullets. However, the silver bullet is in a month, and it has to hit. If the silver bullet misses the beast, which would be the quarterback, then there could be a problem. But Kwesi and staff have done terrific work this offseason.
I think there's a quiet confidence in the organization, and it may put too much pressure on Kevin O'Connell and make his life harder than it would have been, especially if he would have continued the relationship with Kirk Cousins. The idea that whoever they give him, whatever lump of clay is put in front of him, he is going to mold into a great quarterback. And I've been making the argument that if I'm one of these guys coming into the draft this year and I'm looking at the teams in the top half of round one, I'm circling the Vikings because I'm confident if I work with Kevin O'Connell, he's going to get me to my absolute maximum performance level. And
right,
we can join at the hip for 15 years. You look at these guys who are going to end up with a defensive head coach and an offensive coordinator who, if things go well, is going to leave. And then here comes another offensive coordinator. And if it goes well, he's going to leave and become a head coach. Eventually, I'm going to get an offensive coordinator who isn't good enough to get the most out of me. It's going to cause me to regress. I want the Sean Payton-Drew Brees relationship. I want 15 years with one coach. That would be very attractive to me. So I think whoever lands with the Vikings is going to be in the best position to get to his absolute maximum, whatever his absolute maximum may be. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do. And not simply because I'm voice of Vikings guy, but I've seen it for 2 years now. And you know, they threw 61% of the time Kevin's first year here. Cousins was terrific. They went 13 games. We go through that four quarterback carousel last year, which you know, at times was miserable. And like, you know, when the Dobbs trick was up, Hall came in. That didn't work. When Mullins played, granted, there were some turnover problems, but it looked like a Kevin O'Connell offense because Nick knows how to run an offense. Sam Darnold knows how to run a passing offense. Cousins obviously does too. So I agree with you on that. You know, and the pieces are falling into place. I mean, if you read ProFootballTalk.com this morning, and I didn't know this until before we did this, you got Brian Kelly basically, I mean, just coming right out and saying Jaden Daniels is going to the Commanders. I believe Kelly. So now we're going Williams Daniels. Kraft can put on his fan hat and want a quarterback all he wants and be like they're going to be desperate teams. He's right. There are desperate teams, and maybe somebody comes way, way, way up with a ton and overpays. I don't see that happening. I think they take a quarterback. So now Arizona's the wild card here with Denver, Vegas, and the Vikings, and maybe a wild cardish team in the top 10 that really nobody's talking about right now. And they have six picks in the top 90, including 4 and 27. So that's the target for me as of right now for McCarthy or May. Personally speaking, I would prefer May by that much. I don't watch enough college football to pretend like I'm an expert. But in putting the pieces together, that's kind of what I think it's leading to.
So what do you think? The Patriots are going to go Bo Nix at 3, and then it's going to be May or McCarthy available at 4? That's what you're thinking?
Where the hell did you get Bo Nix at 3?
Well, who's going to 3 then if the Patriots take a quarterback?
McCarthy.
Who's after?
McCarthy.
Oh, you said McCarthy or May. I see what you're saying. I got you.
Yeah, my bad.
Bo Nix is up there too. If you listen to Sims, Bo Nix is up there at 3.
Okay.
Yeah. He's down on May. He's got May at 6th out of 6. So I don't know about May.
Well, okay. I understand that. And I'm not one to argue.
I was going to ask you one last question. Let me put a pin in this. I got to go.
Yeah. So do I. But we have McCown. Don't forget that.
When we talk the next time, I want you to tell me which round draft pick the Vikings are going to get from the tampering that the Falcons blatantly engaged in with Kirk Cousins. And I say
I can't wait to see you and young Alexander at the Vikings-Falcons game at US Bank Stadium. It's the Vikings against Kirk O'Chains. It's going to be great.
Thank you. Thanks for helping me out today. We'll be back to wrap up this Friday edition of PFT Live. Happy Easter, Paul. Talk to you soon. We'll be right back. There are certain Fridays on the calendar that become useful for the placement of news that you would rather not everyone notice in a significant and conspicuous way. I say that because this is kind of one of those Fridays. It's Good Friday for those who participate in the Judeo-Christian, probably not Judeo, but Christian calendar. I don't want to be exclusionary here. I know people practice all sorts of different religions, and I want to be inclusive in my approach, but it's Easter Sunday. It's Good Friday. It's a holiday kind of weekend. So, you know, this would be a time for some bad news to be dumped. And I'll invite you to wonder what is out there that hasn't been resolved yet that could be resolved today, possibly with an announcement, possibly a decision, possibly some discipline, possibly of somebody who might not like being disciplined, possibly, maybe at some point today. If it happens, you might be seeing me again for an emergency PFTPM. Thanks for your time. See you Monday.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.